welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast Season 3, culminating with the Layer 8 Conference on Saturday, October 8th in Providence, Rhode Island. This season, we'll have conversations with social engineers and OSINT investigators who will tell their stories. We hope you enjoy them. Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have yet another special guest for you today. We have Vanessa Ninovich, also known as Intel Inquirer. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
For the benefit of our listeners, could you tell them a little bit about who you are?
Sure. So I have a really strong interest in open source intelligence. I have a blog with the handle Intel Inquirer, where I talk about OSINT, SOC Mint, and intelligence analysis. And earlier this year, I presented at the SANS OSINT Summit, which was a really cool opportunity. And I talked about deepfakes and using OSINT techniques to detect them. I have experience also investigating fraudulent activity and threats online using open source intelligence and social media intelligence.
You mentioned that you're really into OSINT, but what is your background with this? How did you get started with OSINT?
Yeah, it's a bit of a story, this one. So I have a twin sister who works in digital forensics incident response. So she's like the go-to IT person for the entire family. She's really technical. And one day she was doing a TraceLab CTF. And for those who don't know, TraceLabs is a non-for-profit organization where they host competitions where you look for missing people online. And I thought, you know what? She asked me if I want to join, and I thought, yeah, let's do it. I had no idea what OSINT was. I had, no idea exactly what to do, but I gave it a go. So I was basically looking for relevant social media profiles and information that I can submit. And I remember I had to take a day off work because of Australian time zones. And the 6 hours ended, and I was like, that was so much fun. I just had such a good time doing these investigations, and I thought, wow, imagine if I could actually get a job doing this one day. It just sounded surreal. I must just that is an option for you. And so she recommended that I join Twitter because she heard about, she knows about the big InfoSec community and the OSINT community. And so that's what I did. And from there, I then had the goal of working as an intelligence analyst. So at the time, I saw OSINT as a way of entering that field because it's available to everyone, because it's free, because all you need is an internet connection, essentially. I thought that was the perfect way for me to utilize these skills and to talk about these skills in an interview. So I went back to university and I signed up for an intelligence analysis course. And in that course, I actually learned about the background of Intel. I learned about the intelligence cycle. I learned about, I was doing OSINT, looking at extremist groups and looking at, doing a SWOT analysis and all these other analytical techniques. And I feel like doing that set a really good foundation for me when it came to doing investigations in the future. And at this same time, I was newly single and there was a pandemic worldwide, and Australia had pretty strict rules and regulations when it came to the COVID-19 pandemic and when you could leave home and where you could go and all of that kind of stuff. It was tough. And so I felt like I had no other choice but to go on dating apps to look for, people online to meet up, to go on dates. Meeting someone organically was purely off the cards during this time. So that's what I did. And while I was on dating applications, before I met up with anyone, I actually decided to do background checks of my own. So before I even knew a lot about OSINT or the tools and techniques or anything like that, I was just doing a few Google searches, trying to find their social media profiles, trying to look for anything that may have look like a red flag, or if they were lying about anything or anything of concern, mostly from like a security standpoint, just to, be on the safe side, because you never really know who they really are until you meet them, essentially. And so, yeah, that's how it kind of all started. And I remember asking my sister, like at the time, can I talk about this in an interview? And she's like, definitely not, don't do that. I was like, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, so that's how it all kind of started for me. And from there, I was, continuously doing capture the flag competitions that were available to me. And then from there, I started to write blogs. And after that, I got my first gig in a role where I was primarily doing OSINT, and it was pretty awesome.
Wow, that's a lot of great stuff. And I want to talk to you about so much of that kind of stuff as we go through. One of the last things you were talking about there was the OSINT for dating sites. Yeah, I've talked to some other women that do the same things. I remember one of these podcast episodes with Stephanie LaHart, and she was talking about how she does the same thing before she goes out on a date with anybody, is she makes sure that she does the full OSINT background check. And even better, she said, when she first meets the person, she tells them, like, hey, guess what I did? I totally looked into and learned everything about you. And she said she usually gets a reaction of basically a shoulder shrug. And guys are like, yeah. So, what did you ever tell any of the people that you met with that you did this full background OSINT check on them?
That is so funny. So I actually haven't really, but my current boyfriend, who I did meet on dating apps, after a while he learned about what I did for work, and he's like, he just asked me, like, did you do a search on me? I was like, of course I did. But the ironic thing is that he has a really common name, so he made it quite hard for me, but I got there in the end.
Okay, great. Let's do that then, because that's one of the things that drives me crazy. Like in my job right now, I am trying to investigate somebody that has a very common name and lives in a very big international city. So, what tip or tips would you give to an OSINT investigator who is looking for somebody that maybe the name's not quite as common as like Mike Smith, but is still pretty common, and going to be difficult to find?
Yeah, so you have to look for really distinctive kind of identifying factors that are unique to most individuals. So it's going to be rare if someone with your name lives in the same suburb and has the same birth date. So looking into, birthday posts on Facebook and getting a rough idea of when their birthday is something that you could use. If you have a photo of them, that could help also looking for factors like, any tattoos, any piercings, any moles, anything that could differentiate them from other individuals. Their friend group, their interests, their hobbies could be very unique also. Everyone's different. So those kinds of things is what you can delve deeper into to differentiate, that POI from other individuals in the area. Yeah, there's so much you can look up. It depends on the individual and what their interests are.
And when you find somebody on a dating app, what is one of your favorite places to pivot to? And what pieces of information might you use to pivot to those other locations?
For me, I was just at the time, because I was so new to OSINT, I was just looking at social media platforms. But even now that I know so much more since then, even sometimes, a quick Google search, you can find things like court records if they've attended court, maybe not for what reason, but that could also be something that is worthwhile looking into. There's different court searches that you can do online, which I believe are paid though. Looking into their friends, looking into what they do maybe outside of work, what their hobbies are, and going from there. Like if they have a hobby, for example, I'm not sure, fishing or something, you could go into particular pages that they follow on Facebook and look into their activities there. So yeah, it depends on what they do in their spare time and what kind of a person they are, which determines where you can pivot essentially. But yeah, there's a lot to go off depending on how much they share online.
And if somebody is just listening to this and the light bulb is going off for them and they're like, oh, I've been looking at dating sites and I never really thought about doing this type of check onto, somebody's social media, onto their Facebook. So what advice would you give to somebody just starting out where
they're in one of the dating sites and they're looking at Fisherman 17 and they want to find that person's social media. What advice would you give on how to find it?
Yeah, well, there's various different tools and techniques that you can use, starting with the basics, a Google search, followed by a reverse image search of them, the photo of them. You can search that username on different platforms. My favorite is What's My Name app, where you can search for that particular username and it showcases various different social media platforms that obtain that exact username as well. And that's where you can really find a lot of social media profiles and basically do your searches from there and continue pivoting.
And can you even go as far as pivoting to like marriage records or something like that to see if somebody's currently married?
That's a really good point. And that is something that, you know, I was basically looking into as well, because there are people who are, you know, potentially looking for things on the side and they are married and that might not be something that agrees with you. So in terms of marriage records, I'm not too familiar with them, especially in Australia in my investigations, but looking at their social media, looking at their posts, looking at Facebook, for example, you can search up the words husband, wife on their profile if it is a public one, or, you know, any other kind of words that may be associated with that particular partnership, and look into that a bit more and see whether they may be even just be in a relationship with someone else at the same time. You can potentially look them up on other dating sites. Are they on other dating sites? That may be an indication of something else going on as well. So there's different avenues that you can definitely take.
And let's flip this around a little bit and not look at dating sites from the perspective of a potential dater, but let's look at them from purely the perspective of OSINT. If I am wanting to look for somebody, which dating sites would you recommend are the most or best OSINT-able?
Great question. So I actually wrote a blog about this. I believe it's titled Dating Apps and Sockmint, It's a Match. And I basically looked at the dating apps that I thought were the best and OSINT-able, essentially. And for me, it came down to Plenty of Fish. From a perspective of an OSINT analyst where you're not paying for services, Plenty of Fish allows you to filter your searches of an individual based on their, you know, their exact location. You can even type in a postcode and, you know, you can filter your searches that way. You can filter through age. You can filter through their relationship status, whether they have children, their religion, their gender, who they're looking for. There's so many different things that you can do and you don't even have to pay, whereas a lot of other ones you are required to pay that dating platform to do these extra searches. And I guess the most difficult thing from an OSINT analyst perspective is the fact that dating applications use your GPS data. So if I'm in Sydney and I'm looking for someone who lives in Western Australia, it's going to be very difficult for me to do those searches because I'm going to be looking within Sydney only. But then there's other dating apps where you can move the map essentially and look and choose where you are, where your setting is, and do searches from there. So I think from an OSINT perspective, those dating apps are the ones that are definitely the best, where you can filter your searches to a T. And the reason why I wrote the blog is because I was conducting, you know, dating app investigations in the workplace, and I started to do a bit of background research before starting these investigations, looking for what's out there from an OSINT perspective. And I realized that there wasn't really much. I mean, there was a lot of blogs about the operational security perspective, how to keep your privacy online if you are using dating applications. But there wasn't anything from an OSINT analyst perspective about how you can search for someone, what are the kind of dating apps out there, what is the most recommended dating app from an OSINT perspective, how to create a sock puppet. You know, those were the kind of intelligence gaps that I was seeing. So that's why I thought of releasing the blog to explain this a little bit more and kind of fill that gap a little bit. I do want to note that everything I do post, you know, I'm doing it from an ethical standpoint. And, you know, unfortunately with OSINT, everything you release can either be used for good or bad, depending on the intentions of the individual. But I'm a firm believer of OSINT for good and sharing knowledge that I have and thoughts that I have. And I think that's what I love most about the OSINT community. The, you know, the fact that we are willing to share so much is fantastic.
Absolutely. There's lots of things that can be used for good or bad. The same thing with social engineering and even sometimes the network hacking. People ask, like, why are you sharing that information? You're just teaching the bad people how to do it. And it's like, well, yeah, but we also have to teach everyone else how to do these types of things as well. Even something like a hammer can be used for to build a house, or it can be used for a destructive purpose. So I can definitely see both sides of this, and definitely the good reasons for sharing this information as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you mentioned operational security a little bit, and I see in your blog site, which if anybody wants to go to it, it's intel-inquirer.medium.com, which I can also put into the show notes. You have some things on here that cross over operational security and dating sites, where it seems like you can also, it looks like you might have tracked some operational security issues with various military and dating sites. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so in my dating app blog, I talked about how you can create a sock puppet and change your location and your age and filter that. So like, for example, you're 90 years old in Outback Australia, no one's going to search for you there, no one's going to find you there. And from this, I kind of extended this blog to talk about intelligence analysis and how times are changing for spies, for intel analysts, from a human intelligence perspective, where back in the day, intelligence analysts and spies would use honeypots and sexpionage to get information from, you know, the opposing party, the opposing side. And, you know, they would put them in compromising positions. They would, you know, videotape certain acts, bribe them. And, you know, that was the way that it was. They also had a lot of spies marrying individuals within the intelligence community to try and get as much intel as they can without them even knowing that they're spies. And for anyone who's interested, The Americans is an amazing show based on a true story as well, which I recommend everyone watch. It's got to do with a lot of this in the 1970s era in the USA. But yeah, basically, spies nowadays need to adapt and adjust to the digital era, and that's what they're doing. So intelligence agencies now are using, and bad threat actors are using, dating applications to target individuals within the intelligence community. And, you know, they're using social media platforms to reach out to individuals in the military and ask information, try and get information, pretend to be, you know, a really attractive woman who's really interested in them, but in reality it's, you know, potentially an intel analyst. So it's a really, really fascinating time, and, you know, intelligence analysis as a whole is adjusting to this online era. And yeah, so basically what I thought was really interesting is that dating applications use your GPS data. And so if a military officer is deployed into, you know, another region, individuals in that region can look at their dating application and find military officers there from the opposing side, which I thought was really fascinating. And yeah, it's becoming a really big problem where there are now military agencies telling their staff, delete your Tinder, delete your Facebook, delete all of it, because you can potentially provide intel regarding where you are. You can provide intel about what rank you are through the uniform that you're wearing, or sometimes they showcase their different social media platforms within their dating app, which is quite common. You can sync, like when you create a dating application, you can sync your Facebook, for example, onto it, or your Instagram, and upload images from there. And so, yeah, that was a really concerning thing that I found and thought I'd blog about, this change of sexpionage from something that was, you know, quite physical to now, you know, you don't even need to meet them face to face. A simple chat on a social media platform or dating application, you know, can do just as much harm. You also have dating applications purely for military, like Military Cupid. And looking on that, it's a public site, it's available to all. And you have military officers in their uniforms in a location where people may be able to geolocate and find out where they are, showcasing their rank, how long they've been in the service for. And yeah, that's a lot of information to give away on a dating application. And I feel like we all use social media on a daily as OSINT analysts. And dating applications, in my opinion, are just another version of, you know, a messaging app that people look at and use in their investigations. It's quite similar in that regard. You can sync your photos from your socials, and it's becoming like a social media platform.
We've been picking on dating apps all this time, but the problem that we're describing here isn't just dating apps. You also wrote a blog post along with Alexander for the OSINT Curious group about another social media application that also reveals some of these similar types of issues, especially with location and where people are, which is a little bit eye-opening when you start to look at it, is the exercise application Strava. Can you talk a little bit about that blog post that you wrote?
Yeah, for sure. It's actually funny the way that blog came about. So I remember I was starting to write a blog about Strava and just, you know, the functionality of it and how it can help OSINT analysts. And I remember making a tweet, and I just said something like, you know, writing a blog is quite easy. The most difficult part is thinking of something that's unique to talk about. And I remember Alexander replying and saying, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's been talked about before, you can provide a unique perspective. You never know who could read it and who might learn from it, which was quite nice. And then he said, I'm actually writing a blog about Strava at the moment. And I was like, wait a second. So am I. It was just such a coincidence. I messaged him and said, you know, this is crazy. I'm actually writing a blog about Strava as well. And that's when we decided to collaborate and write a blog together. But yeah, so that blog goes into, well, I primarily focused on Strava as a platform, how you can find certain information through that online. And Alexander went into the, you know, the military perspective in terms of the example that he provided. And basically he found locations of a military, basically training camp that was unknown to others. And, you know, you have people in a group running in a particular area at the same time each day. And it just provided a huge perspective in terms of the amount of intelligence you can find on the platform, even from a military perspective. So for example, if you do find, you know, even a dating application of an individual in the military, and you sync that with their Strava, and you find their Strava and look at where they've been running, that gives you confirmation of where they are and their training and what they're doing and their colleagues and all this other information that can be used and corroborated. And it's really quite fascinating because on Strava, it shows a map of exactly where you are from the minute, you know, you start your exercise to the minute you finish, if that's when you want to time your exercise. So it's really fascinating the amount of information that you can get on Strava.
You definitely can find a whole lot of information on Strava, and I use it myself. One of the things that I've stumbled across is the privacy controls. And I see that I've actually left mine open to the world, open to everyone. And I didn't give you a whole lot of notice, but I think it was like maybe a few hours ago, I sent you a link to my Strava account, say like, what can you find on here? And was there anything from an OSINT perspective on there that you thought like, oh, if I was investigating him, I could, these types of things would be interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, so firstly, from an OSINT perspective, the fact it was on public was fantastic, because if something's on private, you have limited amounts of information to go off. So that's the first thing. And, you know, as an OSINT analyst, if I confirm this is yours, for me, the goal is to look for as many social media platforms as I can related to you. So I think the first thing would be for me to look into your followers and following and see who's there. And basically, if I was struggling to find social media platforms that was owned by you, I would potentially do OSINT searches into these individuals that you follow or who follow you, look for their social media, and then try and find you that way and look for your name that way. So that's the first thing. And, you know, you've got images as well of yourself with others, you know, doing the exercises that you do, which is fantastic. But as well as that, just to give another perspective, if I was searching someone like a friend of yours or, you know, a relative, and I didn't find much on them, I could potentially look up, you know, their relatives. So for example, I could search up you and find your Strava, and from there find images of my POI. So a lot of the time, you know, since if your POI has, you know, really strong privacy settings and or doesn't have a lot of social media profiles, there's every chance that they've got an aunt, for example, who posts 100 photos at Christmas every year, and bam, I've got photos of my POI. So sometimes, you know, pivoting in that regard could also help. And then with Strava as well, as I said before, it provides a map of where you exercise, which is great from an OSINT perspective, because sometimes you can kind of get indication of where you may reside. If you are starting to do exercises at a particular location almost daily, I can almost guarantee that you're not driving to this location to do a walk there, if you're just doing a simple walk in the morning. And that could be an indication of where you may reside. So yeah, sometimes it's really good to look back in time to see when someone started doing it, doing exercise and where, and if that trend has continued throughout time to the current time. So if you started exercising in a particular place on one day when you first started using the app 5 years ago and you're still exercising there now, that gives me a really strong indication, and I can corroborate that with any kind of residential database searches that I do. So if, you know, a residential database says you live in a particular area and you've been walking there every day, that gives me a really strong indication that that's where you are currently located. From there as well, I can then look up the residential address on Google Maps, and I can find, for example, the cars that are there. So if you, let's say you take a selfie in your car and upload it on Facebook, and I have your Google Maps of your address and see multiple cars there, because I'm not a big car person, I can search up the car on a website called carnet.ai, and that can give me the model and the year and the make of the particular car in a driveway, and I can corroborate the interior of that car with your selfie, which is another form of corroboration of where you may reside. And this is all stemming from Strava. So I think it's, you know, a social media application that should not be ignored in investigations. It can actually provide a lot of information if you're a part of a running club in your particular area and I'm struggling to find you on social media. I can look up that running club page on Facebook and maybe find you on there, or find your friends on there that have uploaded photos of you. So there's a lot of different avenues in Strava and a lot of different points that you can gather to corroborate your investigation further. And you can also find leads also that you can follow up.
I also super appreciate that you didn't mock me and my super slow running times that I have posted on there on Strava as well.
I'm not any better, don't worry.
All right. You have another blog post that I thought was super interesting at your site. It was the more than just a background geolocation analysis. A few weeks ago, I was also talking with Stephen Harris, Nick's Intel, about this sort of thing as well. And it is the really the, I think, one of the big differences between people like you and Stephen and people like me when I'm doing this type of analysis. Because people like you and Stephen are able to pick out little things in a picture that are unique that make it very important. For example, in your blog post, you have a tweet in there from Julia Bayer where there was a photo in there, and the questions are, where was this photo taken and what time was the photo taken? And I look at it and I'm just like, I have no idea what to start on. You know, there's some graffiti. It looks like a little bit of a mess or something. I don't even know where I would start. And you zoomed in on this one little thing in there. But do you remember a little bit about that blog post and the types of investigation and the little things that you were able to find in there and zoom in on and focus on?
Yeah, so from memory, it was a particular type of graffiti, and they said a particular word in English. And so I remember doing searches on that particular word, because when you think about, you know, graffiti artists or, you know, teenage rebels, they usually use the same tag everywhere. And so they're usually proud of it as well. So I remember doing searches of that particular tag and then finding more in the region of Berlin. And so by doing that, I was able then to find further tags and confirm that it was probably in Germany. And then from there, I did further searches to confirm the location of that particular petrol station. In terms of the actual techniques, cannot confirm at this stage. I think that was a while ago. But yeah, even just little things, looking out for unique points of interest in an image, it could be really, really helpful. Something as unique as, you know, a particular tag that you can maybe reverse image search and look up, and you can find further tags around that particular city, which gives you an indication of where it might be. And because it was a petrol station, from memory, I may have looked at the different petrol stations in that region and then eventually come across that particular one, noting that I believe it was maybe a historical image. So in Google Maps, you can actually look at a particular region or area from the past. So you can pinpoint particularly when you want to look at images from that particular region, depending on how updated it is. And the region, because some places aren't as updated as others. But yeah, that was a really interesting one. And yeah, I think Quiz Time have some great geolocation quizzes that they post, I think, on a daily basis. So I think it's a really good initiative for people to practice and learn the skills there.
And I really do recommend that if somebody is interested in that kind of technique, that they do look at your blog post and see just that little bit of information that you were able to pick out of that photo. I don't think it was even something that I noticed that was there when I first looked at it. And then as I read through the blog post, it just made sense. And it was like, oh yeah, which is great with these kinds of write-ups that OSINT investigators like you do, to be able to say step by step, here is the way that I was thinking through this, which makes perfect sense when you read it. And it really helps people like me to get an understanding of your thought process, which I think with OSINT, many people, when they're starting out, think, I need to know tools. When really, I'm going to guess that you might disagree with the first priority being tools, that the first priority really should be this type of thought process, which is what you are stepping through in your blog post. And it's showing exactly how you are thinking your way through. Would you prioritize thought process over tools with OSINT?
100%. I totally agree. And that's why, you know, I mentioned earlier, going to university and learning about this and critical thinking, this analytical mindset, is something that really gave a good foundation for me for when it came time to doing OSINT investigations. I remember in the beginning doing OSINT investigations before I even knew that it was OSINT. I remember, as I said earlier, I was on dating applications and I had a colleague who was also on them at the same time. And I've just got a little bit of a case, a bit of a story to tell regarding this. But essentially, she was really obsessed with a guy, right? And she had talked to him for months. And I was like, oh, when are you guys going to meet up? And she said, oh, I'm not sure. He's quite busy with work. He's constantly, you know, flying here and there. But, you know, he was a very attractive individual. He had it all. He lived in the city, which was, you know, quite expensive in Sydney. You know, vintage cars. He had all of this stuff. And for me, like, something just didn't add up. It just didn't seem right. Like, for me, you're on dating apps to, you know, try and meet someone. So if there's constantly excuses, that might be a red flag also. So I asked her, I was like, do you mind if I do, you know, a little background search on this individual? Because at the same time, that's what I was doing with the people before I met up with. And she said, you know, yeah, sure. So she gave me his name and an image of him. And that's all I had to work with. So I looked through her social media profiles and looked for the name Brad mentioned anywhere, if she was friends with a Brad or anything like that. I found her Facebook, I found an Instagram, and there was no Brad mentioned. I thought, that's interesting. And then I found her Pinterest. And in her Pinterest, she had a folder named Brad with several images of this guy that she was obsessed with. And that kind of showed me, you know, how obsessed she actually kind of was. And to me, that was almost a really big red flag in terms of the manipulation that may have been going on in terms of their conversations. And so what I did then, I basically did I took one image from the Pinterest folder and did a reverse image search. And, you know, this is quite a simple and basic tool and technique that exists. I just used Google. I did a reverse image search and I found out that this was not Brad. This was a man who is the most used individual for dating scams worldwide. He is a very attractive, somewhat elderly man. Not elderly, but like older than, you know, your 20-year-olds on dating apps. And these people are kind of targeting people who are a little bit older on these apps. And yeah, he is a model. He lives in the US, not in Sydney. He's married with children. And, you know, it was just through this basic technique I was, you know, I found out this kind of information. And so I had to tell her that Brad doesn't actually exist. And she was quite upset by that. But at the same time, it was a very easy kind of tool and technique that was used. There wasn't much technical stuff going on in the background or anything like that. There wasn't a lot of tools used. And sometimes that's all you need. You know, if you're doing OSINT on someone and you search their name, you know, you can find things like potentially a court record or something like that. And that could be a big enough red flag for you. And I know there is a private investigator from Australia, Casey Pine. She has a business called Quick Look, and she's kind of offering these services to individuals. And I think it's a fantastic initiative for those who might not know how to do these little background checks and have a suspicion or red flag regarding the individual that they're talking to online. And I also want to say there's also a podcast by Julia Robson from Melbourne called Chasing Charlie, where she goes into detail as a private investigator how she found an online scammer who traveled around the world scamming individuals around the world. But yeah, sometimes all it takes is a Google search. You know, there's Facebook groups now dedicated towards ratting out individuals who are scamming people online, showcasing their face, showcasing their name and the different usernames that they use. And I feel like OSINT is something that one day might be taught to even primary school kids. Like for me, when I look back, when I was in primary school, there was 5 computers for the whole school and that was it. Whereas now, like, you've got children with iPads who work on those every day. And I feel like there'll be only a matter of time before they're taught these kinds of tools and techniques that can be used. And it can save, you know, it can save you so much. So my colleague who was talking to Brad, thankfully she wasn't financially scammed, but that was probably the next step that was going to be made. So it's a really big problem when you look at, you know, Tinder Swindler, for example, and the emotional and financial effects that dating scams can have. It's a really big problem. And OSINT is one way that you can potentially stop yourself from being scammed.
One of the questions that I like to ask all the guests that come on here, is what advice would you give to somebody just starting out today who wants to get into OSINT and who wants to get to the level that you're at now?
I think the fantastic thing about OSINT is that it's free. It's available to all. All you need is an internet connection, and that's fantastic. And for me, one of the best pieces of advice that I got was to make a Twitter account. It sounds so simple, but the OSINT community on Twitter is huge. And just by following the OSINT hashtag, the SOCMIT hashtag, and following, you know, some of the big names who share some really interesting content and tools and techniques almost on a daily basis, it's really worthwhile. Even if you don't want to post anything, don't want to share anything, that's fine. But following them and looking at how they solve certain investigations and issues and what kind of tools they may use and why, I think is probably the best piece of advice that I ever got when I started. I was quite shy to post anything. I was just following, you know, the big names. And from there, I decided to, you know, write blogs and share my knowledge and thoughts. But, you know, even if you're not confident doing that, just following it. Because to this day, I look at Twitter probably on a daily basis, and I probably learn something new every day as well. And this is something that I can bring forth to my team also. If there is a new tool, if there is a technique that, you know, no longer functions, you know, it's such a fast-paced environment and industry that, you know, keeping up to date is worthwhile, and it's a hobby for me. But I think doing that would be, you know, the best advice that I can give personally.
And what value would you say there is in sites like GeoGuessr, QuizTime, TryHackMe for somebody starting out? Are those things that a beginner can jump right into?
Definitely. I think GeoGuessr is fantastic, and QuizTime also from a geolocation perspective. Yeah, it depends on, you know, there's different areas of OSINT that one can explore. It's not just, you know, searching for usernames online. There's geolocation, there's image analysis, there's looking at satellites, there's all these different things. And, you know, Bendo Brown on Twitter is also a great individual in the geolocation department. But yeah, there's so many different tools and hackathons, and there's CTFs like Trace Labs. There's conferences like the Layer 8 conference and SANS and all those kinds of things. There's so many different Twitter followers out there that you can follow also. So yeah, there's a lot going on in the space. It's a really exciting time and a really exciting industry to be in. And there's just so many avenues that one can take to start learning. And yeah, it's all online, it's all available. And yeah, all it takes is some initiative and a passion for it, really. And that's how it can all start.
And would you recommend that somebody starting out jumps into something like one of those Trace Labs competitions? Do you have to know a whole lot to get involved with that? Or can you jump in and meet up with other people, pair up with others, make a team and jump into the competition?
Definitely jump in. That's exactly what I did. I had no idea what OSINT was. I remember at the time, I don't even think I knew what TikTok was. Like, I was so behind with social media. Like, I was just not up to date at all. And my twin sister, being quite technical, she knew, you know, all the Python scripts and, you know, Instaloader, and, you know, she knew about Have I Been Pwned and those kinds of tools, which is different to what I use on the daily. So it was quite a unique time and a really, really good experience. And I recommend anyone jumping on, even if you don't have a full team, that's fine. Just giving it a go. I think that's what it's all about, the Australian way. Give it a crack.
Vanessa Ninovich, also known as Intel Inquirer, thank you so much for joining us on the Layer 8 podcast.
Thank you for having me.